Give a little time for the child within you. Don't be afraid to be young and free. Undo the locks and throw away the keys and take off your shoes and socks and run you.
I'm Jesse Thorne, America's radio sweetheart.
And I'm Jordan Morris, boy detective.
And this is
Jordan,
Jesse, go!
Icicles, tricycles, ice cream, candy, lollipops, popsicles, licorice sticks, Solomon, Grundy, Raggedy Andy, Tweedledum and Tweedledee, home free.
This week on Jordan, Jesse, Go, we visit with Hard and Firm. Jordan plans his nerdy friend's bachelor party and our worst jobs ever. Let's go. Welcome to Jordan, Jesse, Go. I am Jesse Thorne, America's radio sweetheart.
And I'm Jordan Morris, boy detective.
This is a beautiful lake, and I'm glad that we are in this rowboat.
Yeah, awesome. Finally, a way to combine my two hobbies.
Lakes and rowboats?
Well, rowboating and podcasting.
Oh, gotcha. And row. I'm ordering you to row, by the way.
Right, and you have a parasol.
I'm the coxman.
And I'm...
The coccyx. No,
and I'm,
coccyx is the bone.
And I'm, what did you call me? I'm the butthead?
Yeah.
Is that what
I think that's the technical.
That's the technical.
Yeah.
Well, you were on crew team at Harvard, so you know.
Actually brown, but
oh.
Yes, I was on crew.
Excuse me. I'll just keep rowing.
And now I'm a sailor on America One. It's a fiberglass racing vessel. It's a long story.
Okay. I'll just continue to row.
Later on in the show, we're going to talk with comic singer-songwriters Hard and Firm, Chris Hardwick and Mike Furman. You might know Chris as the host of Shipmates, speaking of boats. but first, we have to answer some important personal questions we got from listener David, David Beach, best known as Beach. He prefers to be called Beach. Here are the questions. He says, hey, fellas, I really enjoy the new show. He's been overseas, but he's catching up now and really liking it. So here are some personal questions. His first question is, what was your first job? Jordan, what was your first job?
My first job, I think, was at Play Company. It's a toy store where I lived in Orange County. And... yeah, we had to wear these attractive denim shirts with the Play Company logo. And
now, when you say that you worked at a toy store, I want to clarify that as I remember from you telling me about this job when we were in college, you worked at the Play Store because they also sold video games.
Yeah, I mean, well, that was a big selling point, is that there was a video game counter. And, you know, every so often it was someone's job to man the video game counter, and I really liked doing that. But like people who would go to a toy store to buy a video game aren't really interested in having a dialogue about video games. It's like a mom or like a stepdad. Stepdads are you know, you just go, hey, you know, my stepkids love these video games. And, so, I mean, it really wasn't like the,
he's like, do you have this Asteroids?
Mario Paint?
Is that the one where you learn to play a song?
I don't know. Well, I don't know much about Mario Paint.
Okay.
I know it existed.
Listeners, if you're out there, tell us which is the one where you learn to play a song with Super Mario Brothers involved. I think it was for Super Nintendo.
Hard to say, though.
What was the best and worst things about working at the toy store?
The best was this sweet metal guy who worked there who loved to talk about metal and organize the action figures by, like, he had this meticulous way to organize the action figures, and he wouldn't let anyone else touch his aisle, and also he loved metal and Zelda and would, like, talk about what the best Zelda game was.
Uh-huh.
And, yeah, that was a pretty sweet guy. It really just made going there worthwhile. And the worst part was, I mean, just working near Christmas time. I remember it's especially stressful.
I'm pretty sure my first job was, obviously depends on what you count as first job. But my first real job, like job was I think it was between my junior and senior years of high school. I worked at a Macy's, downtown San Francisco, Macy's. Mm-hmm. And I had this boss called Samuel. And Samuel was this raving queen who was always hitting on me. It made me really uncomfortable. So I would, like, talk about my girl. Like, I obviously, like, wasn't – and it wasn't in, like, a – it was in, like, a convivial way. Like, it wasn't ever so bad that it was, like, something that you would complain to somebody about.
Mm-hmm.
But it was enough to just be like, oh, come on, don't do that. Stop that. That's annoying.
Right.
And it wasn't ever like I felt like if I didn't go out with him, he was going to fire me or something. But he would always talk to me. And Macy's is the weirdest place to work because it's such a weird in-between highbrow and lowbrow place.
Yeah. Isn't it more lowbrow these days? Like, isn't it more a place where, you know, like a 16-year-old girl would go to spend?
Yeah, and I worked in the 16... I should also mention that I worked in the expressions section, which was for young women. It was okay. The young women's. It was not the juniors section.
No.
I want to make that clear. It was the young women's section. And, yeah, it was weird because, like, I didn't really want to be friends with the other people that worked there,
mm-hmm.
because mostly they were grown-ups who were a little sad that they worked there.
Yeah.
Like Samuel, my boss, a grown-up that was kind of sad that he worked there. And it just really made me uncomfortable. And also most of the customers, it being in Union Square in San Francisco, were these goofy tourists from like all over the world.
Hmm.
And they would always be, like, really impressed at something that I was, like, wearing or something like that. And it wasn't that impressive. I'm going to be honest with you, Jordan. I wasn't that impressive.
Like a tie tack on or something?
Or something, yeah. I remember people... Do you remember when people would wear, like, a pair of pants that had a zipper in it that would turn it into shorts?
Yes.
I had a pair of pants like that, and people were just so impressed by it.
Going bonkers.
They were just going nuts. Absolutely crazy. Anyway, that was my first job. Second question, what was your worst job? Jordan, what was your worst job ever?
Okay, well, two kind of spring to mind. These kind of happened semi-recently. I moved out to L.A. to work, you know, kind of low-level show business jobs, PAing and such. And I got my first PA job pretty soon after college.
PA stands for production
assistant.
A production assistant.
And that's... you know, you get the coffee and you get the meals and you run the scripts off, yada, yada, yada. It's, you know. Anyways, my first PA job was actually pretty good. It was on the show called Living with Fran. It was Fran Drescher's big
created
comeback.
By Jamie Kennedy.
Yeah, created by Jamie Kennedy. It's this odd mishmash of people.
A coming together of two comedy titans.
Right, yeah. It's finally those two.
I think anybody who saw The Nanny was like, this is good, but it could use a dash of white boy faux hip-hop quality. And anybody
right.
who saw the Jamie Kennedy experience was like...
This could use some Long Island diva.
Exactly.
And so anyway, so TV, you know, has some rare, very defined seasons. It works in, you know, seasons. And, you know, after the first season
like
of the
being,
show...
It's like being a farm laborer.
Right, exactly. And there's ebbs and there's flows. And
with more catering.
And... So kind of the thing to do on it, when you work on a TV show, the season gets over and, you know, what people usually do is they go on unemployment for a couple of months until the new season of the show or until a new show starts that they can jump back on. And, you know, there's a couple of exceptions like reality shows sometimes tape all year round and talk shows and things like that. I mean, but usually there's a few months where people are just unemployed and they get on unemployment and that's just how you live when you work in TV, and that's the lifestyle. And I kind of didn't know that the first time. So when the season got over, I panicked a little bit. I was like, oh, you know, what am I going to do? I have, you know, 3 months, and the show might not even get picked up, and yada, 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 and I don't know what I'm going to do about it. So I just kind of frantically looked for another job, like even if it was terrible. And I did a couple of things that...
That you
just
regret
awful.
Now.
Yeah. And the first one, the first thing I went to was...
The first thing you did that you regret, peyote.
Right. I'm like, if I could just find my spirit guide, if I can just find that spirit, my animal totem, I'll be okay. I'm a fish. Learned that. The first thing I did was I worked for this... telemarketing place. It was, and here's just an example of something you would do at this telemarketing place. You would call up a random phone number with the random phone number dialing machine and says, you know, I want to ask you about a few movies. And you're like, you know, would you say that you're aware of Vin Diesel? And like, would you say that he is one of your favorites? Not one of your favorites. Are you, you know, how aware are you of Alone in the Dark? You know, and just all these different things. It was so awful, so terrible. I did it for one day, and I just didn't go back because it was just like so, just crushing. It was just awful, and it was just demeaning, and they treated you like a baby, and you were just randomly calling people. And you like, it's not like at the end of taking this movie survey where you ask them about Vin Diesel, they got something. It's not like, well, we'll send you 3 AMC movie passes or, you know, you'll be entered into a drawing to win a Mac iBook.
Did you,
you know,
use that voice when you were calling people?
I various voices. You have to use different voices.
Uh-huh. That was so, the yeah, whole interview. Just, they just asked you to do a couple of voices.
Yeah.
And you're like, I can't do any voices besides this one. Unless you count this one. And they're
wow!
like, and they're like, you're hired.
Yeah. I do a great walk-in. So that was a disaster, and I don't recommend anyone ever doing anything phone related, where you randomly call people. The other thing, after that, I got this job at this kind of fancy wine and cheese place. It was called Say Cheese is the name of the place.
And you're a fan. And to be fair, you're certainly an enthusiast when it comes to the finer things in life.
Right. I mean, I like a good, you know, Gouda aged in volcanic ash as much as the next guy. A cave-aged Gruyere.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, it's naturally, I would.
To
I
be
mean,
clear,
I had all
we're
the knowledge.
Speaking ironically.
Yeah, I have no. This is not. This is so far from
you
my
like Xbox
sphere.
360.
I like Xbox like. 360, and yeah, and Dr. Pepper. That's that's it, pretty much. So yeah, way outside my comfort zone. But I mean, like, hey, I can learn a couple things.
Yeah.
Like, what's more, you know, I can have some knowledge that might be impressive on a date. I can say something about wine and cheese. That would be awesome.
You could say something impressive, perhaps to a sommelier.
Sure. And here's I just want to give you a little idea of here's the guy who ran the place, and there's this one thing that happened that I think sums up this guy perfectly. Someone came in and asked if he had any quince. Like, do you have any quince? And it's like a candied pear, right? That's what a quince
no,
is.
It's a kind of pear.
It's a okay.
Because you can get it at the Korean grocery store. But they came in. They didn't ask in that voice. They came in and said, "Do you have any quince?"
Actually, I remember the guy who came in was actually pretty normal asking
like,
for the quince.
Hey, you got any quince?
Hey, oh.
Hey, I just got back from the auto body shop. You got any of them quinces?
I'm famished.
And it's kind of like a pear, kind of like an apple.
Here's what the boss said. He's like, we are all out of quince. It's been crazy around here. What with the Super Bowl and all. The Super Bowl. That's why there's no more quince, because of all the Super Bowl parties. So that I think, it gives you a little idea of what the attitude around that place was like. And I was just terrible at it. I mean, the people were relatively nice and patient with me, but I mean, I just, like, I can't.
How did you get the job?
I think they just needed
someone. Were they just living with friends?
And I had, like, they needed someone to work the espresso machine, and I knew how to work an espresso machine.
Oh. Why did you know how to work an espresso machine?
Because I worked in that coffee shop in college. So, yeah, I mean, I knew what the difference between, like, a latte and a cappuccino was.
Gotcha.
But I was just so awful. Like, I was bad at washing dishes. I broke a lot of stuff. I couldn't, like, measure. There was a lot of weighing and measuring, just, like, all these precision things that I just can't do. So I was just awful at it, and I finally got this job working on a Korean variety show, so I got to quit. And I think they were just relieved that I quit. I mean, because, you know, it's like...
Because you're a nice guy.
Yeah,
no one wants to fire
me because I'm pleasant and I, you know, hose down the mats without...
Without complaint.
Without complaining, but, I mean, I was really awful at it. And if anyone from that store is listening, I apologize for the really shitty job I did while I was there.
I never, like, I guess Macy's would probably be the worst job that I ever had because it was really, they say that it's a sales job, but really it's a folding job. Like, there's no...
Yeah, yeah.
There's no people whose job it is to fold at Macy's, so the salespeople just fold all the time and then occasionally accidentally help someone. So that was pretty miserable, but what occurred to me once is I spent a summer in Washington, D.C. working at XM Satellite Radio, and while I was there, I met the guy who ran the internship program at National Public Radio, who's a really good guy, and I know to this day. And he was like, "Hey, Jesse, you know, we have a lot of cool experience. I was wondering if you might be interested in maybe heading up or being the producer of our intern edition next year, coming and being an intern and then doing intern edition, which is like where all the interns over the course of their internship put together a piece and they put it into kind of an NPR news magazine style show, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, yeah, of course, I would really love to do that. And so I was really excited, obviously, NPR, that's where, you know, where I would love to work. And so I went home to Santa Cruz, spent the year in Santa Cruz, applied for the NPR internship. My girlfriend Teresa got a job at the, what's that called, the American Bar Association in D.C., doing something that she really wanted to do. We found a place to live and a job that would sustain us there. And then I found out I didn't get the job at NPR somehow. I don't know how. So I ended up working at Borders.
Right.
And I had this my boss who worked at Borders was just the – for one thing, like working at a Borders is like for a terrible job. It paid terribly. And, you know, you had to do a lot of lame stuff. But it was nice because the people who choose to work at a bookstore books. And, you know, like they're probably failures in life to some extent for some, one reason or another. Like,
but they're not the kind of failures who like, you know, get high in the middle of the day.
Exactly. They're the kind of failures who have like they failed, but now they found something that they're like comfortable with and they actually they're there because they want to be there. You know what I mean? Yeah. And that was why I was there. But my boss gave me this. My boss was another kind of queenie guy. I don't know what it is about me and weird queenie bosses, but this boss of mine was a really decent guy. I mean, he hired me and just was a really decent fella, but just dumb as a rock. And I don't know how he ended up working at the bookstore, because most of the people at the bookstore were really competent and pretty bright, especially for retail employees, you know what I mean? And that's why they worked at the bookstore, because they wanted a lot of really interesting, you know, like people who are partly retired and that kind of thing. And but this one guy, he tells me, he's giving me this lecture while he's orienting me, giving me the orientation about how people who shop at Borders love all different kinds of books, and Borders loves and everybody there loves books. And he said, for example, and then he showed me his collection of signed first editions of hardcover James Patterson novels. James Patterson being, I don't know, you could loosely be described as the shitty Michael Crichton. the prospect of someone collecting James, like just the idea to me of someone buying it in hardcover instead of waiting for the pocketbook to come out. Like, I have no reason, I have no objection to people buying a trashy novel and reading it on the plane, but the idea of collecting autographed first editions of James Patterson books, you know what I mean? Like, that really kind of boggled
my mind.
Yeah, so that was my disastrous summer in Washington, D.C., was the summer that I ended up working at Borders because, for some reason, I didn't get the internship that I'd been offered at National Public Radio.
Good times.
Question number three, what did you want to be when you grew up?
Oh, I mean, in my young days, dinosaur scientist,
good.
Archaeologist,
paleontologist. Yeah.
Yeah, huge dinosaur fixation when I was younger. And yeah, I remember I went to this thing where it was like breakfast with a paleontologist, and some restaurant had a thing where some paleontologists were just sitting around and you could go to their table and ask them any questions. And it was one of the
That's really great.
Yeah, and this was the first time this lady paleontologist, I sat down and asked her what the most recent dinosaur she had discovered was, and she told me it was Superosaurus, and that basically changed my life, young life.
When I was younger, I was a really huge baseball fan, baseball nut, baseball nerd, and I played on the baseball team, and I guess when I was about seven when I really got into baseball, and maybe I thought I could be a baseball player for a little bit, but unfortunately, like, I was too rational as a kid, and I understood that when I was, like, the seventh best player on my team, like, good enough to play, like, I wouldn't ride the bench.
You were just in left field the whole time.
You know, and I got a lot of hits, not a lot of power, you know, good fielder, but, you know, not very fast. You know, I wasn't that good, and I think I realized that I wouldn't be a baseball player by, like, age 8.
Right.
Like, maybe between 7 and 8, but what was weird about it was I was such a baseball nerd that I was plotting out alternate baseball careers. I'm like, well, maybe I can become an umpire. I read this book about how you become an umpire. Now, looking back, the prospect of, that I, as a child, aspired to be an umpire, oof. Anyway, well, I want to know what people's worst job has been in their life.
Absolutely.
The worst job. That's a great action item. Call us 206-984-4FUN or email our new email address. The reason I put in this new email address instead of having people email me directly was not because I don't want to give out my email address, but mostly because I end up forgetting, losing the emails that people send me or forgetting about them. So email jjgo@maximumfun.org with your worst job, or give us a call at 206-984-4FUN.
Also, maybe I want to add what your best job, and not necessarily like the, you know, oh, I got my, you know, I was working.
I finally achieved my dream.
Right. But just like, you know, a job where you could.
Sous chef.
Where you could get high in the middle of the day, or that had a lot of babes at it or something.
Yeah.
I'd like to hear about those,
too. Hot dudes.
Yeah. Dudes, babes.
Like if you're a chick and you worked at the Chippendales bar or something?
Yeah.
I don't know what that even
Or if there was like, you know, some free ice cream job you had.
I heard free ice cream jobs are terrible. I bet there's somebody out there who worked in an ice cream parlor and is going to call us and tell us that ice cream parlors are terrible.
Well, let's hear it then.
206-984-4FUN. La, 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 la. This is Jordan Jesse Go. I'm Jesse Thorne, America's radio sweetheart.
And I'm Jordan Morris, boy detective.
I got irby there for a second. I was worried I wasn't going to be able to come back on the, you know, my part of the announcing. I thought I was going to burp on the microphone, but I didn't.
Awesome. I thought you said herpy.
Yeah, I got herpes for a second there. Herpy?
I thought you said herpy. I thought you said I got herpy.
Herpy isn't even a word.
Doesn't that sound like getting the herp? Isn't that like a naval disease? Like something that a sailor would come back with?
From all using the same toilets and bars of soap.
Right.
Like he would get that on shore leave or he would get that on the seas.
I guess that's just short for herpes. Anyway, it sounds different.
Anyway, our guests on the program, Chris Hardwick and Mike Furman, together they are the musical comedy duo Hard and Firm, or the comedy musical duo, as opposed to the musical comedy duo.
There is a difference, actually, I think. Yeah. There is a difference.
You don't do, like, Sondheim parodies.
No, well, no. You know, the thing is we're constantly talking about how it's much easier to be the comedians at a music show than it is the musicians at a comedy show. So,
their expectations are a lot different.
Yeah, if you're at a comedy show, people are like, how come there's not a joke happening every 30 seconds? And when you're at a music show, people are like, someone's not taking things seriously, yay! And they give it up, as it were.
Yeah. Is that true? I would have expected exactly the opposite, to be honest with you.
No, we thought that in the beginning. We were playing, we played the Viper Room in Spaceland a few times and just different clubs.
Kind of hip rock and roll clubs in Los Angeles.
And every time we went, we were like, we're going to get killed.
You know what? I think I would tend to think that music is kind of, it's nice to add to a show. Like if you're in a comedy show, people are like, oh, okay, it's kind of funny. Oh, but there's music. And we would like to think people are like, oh, and there's music. But people are just like, okay, then they play music. But if you go to a music show and they're like, holy shit, these guys are like kind of clever and kind of like, it might be a relief as opposed to just a bonus. It's like, oh, thank God.
So are these the kind of shows, because I would imagine that in most contexts where the people are mixing music and comedy, it's like, I don't know, like Steve Harvey opening for Luther Vandross or something like that. But it's something like where people came to see the headliner. And so the fact that the opening act or the MC or the middle act is not a musician just kind of adds insult to the injury of the fact that they're not the headliner.
I will say that Jay Leno did not hurt Kenny G's show at all by opening for him in Santa Barbara, in Paso Robles, 1988.
They didn't somehow fortify each other.
No.
Have you guys ever done the kind of comedy and music show where the music is a famous thing that you would come to see, as opposed to the kind of comedy and music show where it's like six acts on the bill and everybody does 20 minutes at a club?
I don't think so.
Open for a band or anything? Not really.
I mean, well, it's not the same thing. We did a benefit with Tenacious D once, but that wasn't really the same.
And it was all comics.
Yeah, it was all comics too. I heard it's real tough to open for them now, though, just because they have such a cult. They have such a huge it's actually not even a cult following anymore. They have such a huge following. I mean, they sold out Madison Square Garden. That if someone goes on before them, people just get pissed off. No matter who it is,
they played Madison Square Garden, the actual Madison Square Garden. Didn't they not like in the
yeah? They sold out like 12,000 seats. Yeah.
Like when I saw they were playing Madison Square Garden, I thought they meant because there's a theater at Madison Square Garden.
Oh, no. And I saw them. I happened to be in Atlanta. We're doing some stuff with Turner, and I was in Atlanta, and Kyle gave me a ticket to the show, so I went and saw it. and you know there were like 6,000 people there, and I was like, it's possible, you know, like you can get out of a room of 30. Not that the rooms of 30 people aren't fun, but when you just look around and you know, and you see just the level that it can get to, it's kind of, I'm not saying it's necessarily going to happen for us, but it's nice knowing that it could.
I know that they were very conscious of adding like a lot of shit to their show in order to justify the fact that they were doing it in front of 12,000 people.
Like what?
Like, you know, like theatrical elements and rotating stage sets and that kind of thing.
They did. Yeah, there were definitely.
Do they
go to hell?
Have you guys found yourselves imagining what the Hard and Firm show would be with the dancing girls and everything?
I think we're right now. We're so. Yeah. I mean, like we're at the point where it's like that would really cost a lot of money. You know, like like the commerce of it has definitely just kills the art of it.
But if we had mad money, yeah, I guess we'd be filming like big, you know.
If we gave you the $1 million budget, like let's say Pepsi was sponsoring your next tour and you were going to be playing, you know, the 10,000 seat places, what would you add to your show?
A lot of Pepsi, for one, probably.
A lot of Pepsi.
Probably a lot of Pepsi references.
I would definitely say gospel choir.
Oh, yeah.
Without a doubt. A marching band.
Yeah, a marching band for sure. It'd be great. One of every kind of band.
One
just
of
like
every
a small
kind of
band,
band
of each, yeah, kind, like a little jazz
just,
quartet.
We could just cover our own songs in different styles. I've seen Elvis Costello do that.
And something we've been talking about wanting to do, we'd have a song or two with five one-man bands.
Uh-huh. Yes, like Arthur Nakani, the Japanese fellow that you can see on Third Street Promenade in Los Angeles.
Five of him.
I would not only like to have lasers, but I would also like to have a LASIK machine perform LASIK surgery on someone during the show, so that by the end of the show they can see better. And you're talking about like $1 million budget, yeah. You know, like those are the kind of things that you can.
This is, I mean, it's a combination of comedy and a solution to America's healthcare crisis.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Right. Because our goal is that we want you to leave better than when you came to the show.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Literally, physically. Yeah.
Physically better.
Physically better.
Yes.
Not
yes.
Emotionally better or just
it's
more
sort of,
powerful
think of
in
it
some
as,
way.
Think of it as like a scientific revival where people come in and go, I have a problem, but instead of speaking in tongues, we actually go, oh, well, here's a device that will, you know, on a molecular level.
Yeah, help you go over to him, you push him on the forehead, and he falls back onto an MRI. And
that's
you
right.
Scan his brain, you find out exactly what's wrong, and then you fix it.
Or you put some sort of an injection device in your palm, and then when you slap him on the forehead, it just fires into his brain, and then corrects.
Essentially, you're talking about building some sort of cyborg army.
Yes. Oh my God, that would be awesome. That might fall a little outside the $1 million budget, and I'm not sure that Pepsi Cola. Would be on board with, and then technically they would own the army too, because if they were sponsoring it,
right.
Then it would
it's
be their
a work,
army
because it's a work for hire.
Yeah, I mean, if we build the cyborg army, it's going to have to be something that we do for ourselves.
And who do we get to open for us?
See,
that's a tough one to fill now.
Kraftwerk.
Yeah, that's not bad.
I'm just throwing that out there.
Yeah,
and get people in that mood.
Yeah,
get the tone. Chris is really thinking about this. That's what's really
I'm really thinking about it now. Like, who would be the perfect compliment?
Because people are going to be, like, sitting there in, like, wheelchairs and crutches, like, waiting for us. People are going to be like, fuck you, get off stage. Hurry up.
I don't know.
Yeah. That's a tough
order. Dr. C. Everett Koop?
Yes. No.
No.
Featuring a lecture
the
from
Staple
Dr.
Singers.
C.
I think the answer is the Staple Singers.
Okay, yeah. Great. I mean, everybody loves the Staple Singers, you know. Rest in peace, Pop Staples.
Yeah.
Died recently. Mm. This is a we're gonna...
He was the one that really held them together.
Dude.
Come on, you knew that you were thinking it.
Yeah.
You knew that
I knew something was coming.
You can take that out and post.
And post it online.
Do you guys want to sing one of your funny songs?
Sure.
Okay.
Awesome. I mean, I noticed that you brought your instrument. I can't help but notice that you brought your instrument.
We just walk everywhere with these.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Melodica not in the song we're about to do. But that's okay, though.
All right.
Although we have been playing Pee-wee's Big Adventure a lot lately. Oh, do you have to tune it down for that?
I'm done.
No. Oh. 2, 3, 4... Mm-hmm.
you have to stop now because I'm getting freaked out. No, seriously, I'm freaking out.
Yeah, I'm having memories of being too afraid to stick out a slumber party.
Wow. Okay. Was it because of the clowns and the bike?
Yeah, it was because of the and that dinosaur also. The clowns and the bike, and then the, you remember that when the dinosaur has
of
the
course.
Bike and he's going.
Yeah.
That's seriously freaking me. I mean, I watched Pee Wee's Big Adventure, I think, the first time when I was like 4,
mm-hmm.
and I just watched it continuously since then. More and it still freaks me out. Like it's still like.
You know what would be great is to cut footage of him, you know, when he's like, ah, oh my God, ah, into just find like, what was that movie, Career Master Cycle, and just like make that like a 40-minute montage of the most nightmaric, crazy shit.
What are you talking about?
If you take that scene from Pee-wee's Big, if you cut into Pee-wee's Big Adventure, a like 40-minute nightmare scene. Oh my God. Take stuff from snuff films and when just keep cutting back to Pee-wee going,
and then go back to the movie.
And then back in. And then, yeah, and just launch back in and he wakes up.
Just cutting just some little bit of Pee-wee into like a, just your standard issue horror film, you know, where the slasher comes out with a knife and then Pee-wee goes, ah! Yeah. And that Pee-wee scream.
Yeah.
Golden. Do you guys want to play a real song?
Yes. Well, we'll play one of our songs.
Okay, good.
It's a real song. This song is called Like Love, and I guess we sort of thought to write it because we were talking about, we really need to write a love song, you know? Yeah. And so we started kind of looking at different bands who had successfully written love songs and tried to get inspiration, you know, like, you know, we looked at the Beatles and we looked to a few other great bands. And
then we found Savage Garden.
Savage Garden. Yeah, it was a band that really has mastered the power simile.
That's right. And the megaphor.
That's right.
The tools of poetry.
That's right. They really just managed to notice the biggest things in life and use them as bases of comparison. So,
I'm kind of blanking. What's an example of a Savage Garden song?
A Savage Garden song is, I don't know what it's called, but there's one song that contains like every large thing that human beings can experience. Like, I want to stand with you on a mountain. I want to something with you on the sea. And then he references the moon.
I want to be with you forever. They're very grand.
Yeah.
Like,
I'm surprised he didn't reference Jupiter. That's pretty fucking big, too.
These are guys who might have opened for Live or something, right?
No. Live was a good band. But, these guys are just your classic, like, early 2000s kind of pap, you know, where you know when they finish writing the songs, like, I want to stand with you in a mountain, I want to go with you with a sea. Someone's like, that's good, bro. And he's like, I know. Yeah, it's a gift.
He's like, who do you think named the band Savage Garden?
Yeah, exactly. He probably, the savagery is what they do to art.
Yeah.
But I'm sure he references Angels and Horses in there somewhere, too. So anyway, we tried to gain inspiration from them, and this song is called Like Love.
Words are what I use to describe the way I feel about you. You've got
eyes as blue as a canyon.
You've got
lips as tall as the moon.
You've got
legs like rain.
In other words, it's just another way to say
what I'm trying to say, yeah. Baby, when we kiss, it's like your lips are touching mine. And when I hold your hand, it's like my hand is holding yours. I wrap my arms around you, 'cause that's the only way I know how to have you in my arms.
And we'll always be together
if we're never apart. And as sure as cows make meat,
you've got hair, teeth, and feet. Yeah,
baby, baby, baby,
you used to be a
baby, baby, baby.
And the way you drive me crazy,
well, it's making me insane. Baby, when we kiss, it's like I'm licking in your mouth. And when I lay you down, it's like my dreams where you lie down. And when I'm thinking thinking of you. You know you're on my mind, and I want you so bad, girl. You know I'm gonna change keys again. Baby, this is it. It's like a song I wrote for you. 'Cause when you're standing there, I see the girl who's not you. But when I close my eyes, girl, it's like the dark of black has made you. And my world disappears. Just came back again.
Because I opened my eyes.
There you go.
That was really powerful.
Yes. Yeah,
very powerful.
I can see what you mean when you say megaforce.
That's right. Yeah.
There's no denying any of it.
It's like an amazing dream that I'm dreaming at night.
You know what I mean? It's so powerful. You could have dreamt it in the day.
Yeah, that's true.
You could dream it while you're awake. Put it that way.
Oh, I mean, you guys are clearly, you know, clearly in touch with your sensitive nature,
yeah.
And you two have both gotten engaged because of it, right? You guys have
because of our collective emotional clitorises.
to write that song, we both went out and got engaged and had to find the woman of our dreams in order to really feel enough to write that.
That must be why I've never written a song.
Well. I had a clit installed behind my left eye, so when I want to feel sensitive, I just flutter my eyes, and it simulates
the back of my head. That sounds kind of spectacular.
That's what Hugh Grant did to get a movie career, right?
That's right. Well, I know he did that for Notting Hill.
Yeah. Right.
What did he do?
He had a clit installed behind his left eye.
Oh my God, really?
Yeah, and it also contributed a lot to his stammering, because he was constantly trying to get in, so he was like, oh, but I just... he was fluttering.
flutter
and stutter. Wow. The old flutter and stutter.
It's not that he was doing it consciously, it's just it's kind of like a feedback loop, you know?
Right.
If you
have
those feelings when you do it, you find yourself doing it sort of like if you were shocked yourself whenever you chewed your nails.
It feels
something.
Really good. I mean, there's no denying that. Mm-hmm. I had it removed after the song was done.
Yeah,
though,
that makes sense.
And that was for moral reasons.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. For some reason, I thought you were going to say that was for Morrissey.
That was for Morrissey.
I had it removed for Morrissey.
I'd do anything for that guy. Means.
I had my eye clit removed for Morrissey. Uh-huh. Oh, that's the new AST quote of the week. I had my eye clit removed for Morrissey. They're never going to put that up. So, yes, Mike, you just got engaged.
Chris, you were already engaged. You can't throw this off on Mike.
Well, we've been engaged for a while. We've just
long have you been engaged for? Like more than a year?
A little bit, but we bought a house when we got engaged.
Uh huh.
And so we got engaged right when we moved into the house, and then there was a period of time where we were like, we just moved. We really don't want to plan a wedding. And Mike, was it? It sounded like it was timed. Like that was a sarcastic.
Right.
So, and then as more time went on, we just got busier and busier. We're like, okay, we'll start talking about it. And then we started having all these friends who were like, don't do it. It'll ruin it.
Not because of the marriage. Not like don't get married.
No. Yeah. The marriage is fine. They're just
the wedding.
It's so much money. And it's so much work. You can't focus on anything else. So, but we actually are doing it. I think what we'll end up doing is probably just having a family-only ceremony and then maybe having a party, you know, and then inviting everyone.
Which will save you money.
It really does, because once you invite, like, one person, your friendships aren't linear. It's everything's built sort of like a molecule. So you're like, oh, if I invite this person, then I can invite. But then if I invite that person, I can invite. Oh, fuck.
And if you invite three out of five, now you can't do that to the other two because
all of a sudden you're locked into an exponential progression.
Yes, yeah. Yes. It's just this bell curve that just goes firing into the sky, which is also directly proportional to how much time and money.
And you know, I worked briefly as an assistant to a wedding DJ one summer, which was a great gig because it paid really well. And you know, you
I would rather go and work in an Alaskan fishery.
Nathaniel did that. Actually,
oh, did you?
Yeah.
And when I was in that job is when I learned like the expense of a wedding, because the man was paying me like $25 an hour or something like that to do practically nothing. I mean,
you worked
help
for the
him
man?
Carry. Yeah, the man.
It turns out he's a wedding DJ.
Oh my God, that makes sense.
The whole time he's been a wedding DJ, people have been looking at the government, looking at
corporate America.
Yeah. No,
that's a good place to hide.
Wedding DJs.
Well, when you tell someone like, oh, I need to buy flowers, and it's for a wedding, then you almost see the dollar signs in the pupils of their eyes. So they will overcharge
you. Of course you want the best.
They overcharge you like four or five times.
That's what I meant by you're going to save money, because if you just have a party,
right,
then you just rent out of whatever it is, banquet hall or restaurant or whatever. But if you say, I'm here for a wedding, yeah, then they're going to be like, all right, it's $50 a person. And you're like, oh.
I mean, it will cost for a dinner, you know, for a dinner at the reception of the wedding can cost $100 a plate.
Yeah.
And you're like, and it's not a special dinner. I mean, it's a regular dinner. I mean, it's not a terrible dinner, but
chicken-based dinner.
It's like a chicken.
Yeah. It's a chicken base or based on chicken.
Yeah, it's a bowl of broth.
Yeah, you're bringing
wedding broth. Okay. Okay. They call it.
Okay. Could you adjust the chicken base a little bit?
Chicken treble's pretty good, but that's good. Chicken base is a little too high.
Well, Mike, what about the chicken mid?
You're actually going to get married?
Yes,
you got engaged. Actually. You got engaged relatively recently, right?
Yes.
How long has it been?
It has been 1 month and 3 days.
How did you propose? How long have you been going out with this girl?
A year.
How did you propose?
The quick story is at a restaurant on our anniversary, and it was New Year's Eve, which was our first sign of going out. So that's our anniversary, and then. And then at midnight went down to, they have a wine cellar, and proposed to her down there.
You just like built a brick wall. It was like the cask of Amontillado. That's how I imagine it.
With more candles, yeah.
It's funny that you mentioned the idea of your first sign of going out was New Year's Eve, because my girlfriend and I have been together for many years, and we're not engaged or married, but... We just picked Halloween to be our anniversary because we knew that was about when we became an item, and I wouldn't forget it.
Yeah.
She would have remembered any date that we picked.
Right.
But we had to pick one that was pretty, because it's a day when you have wear a costume and all that stuff. So I remember that day.
Ladies remember dates, but guys are like, I don't know.
But here's
what's the ballet?
But here's the thing, Chris.
Write it on a football and stick it in a beer.
My whole life of growing up has just been turning into a cliche. Just me turning into a cliche.
Those cliches exist for a reason.
It's really awful, isn't it? I felt like my whole teenagehood or whatever, I found myself just like mocking those cliches, you know, like, oh, women have feelings and men want to erase feelings, you know, and like solve problems and women want to talk things out or something.
Yeah.
Like, no, it's like every month I have some big thing with my girlfriend where really what happened is she wanted to just talk about her feelings and she would feel better just by saying them out loud, whereas I compulsively wanted to fix them somehow.
Sure.
Typical Venetian.
Yeah.
Oh, no, wait, that would make you from Venice. Women are from Mars. Men are from Venice, it turns out. And Italy and Mars are really far apart anyway.
Women have rich emotional lives, and men sell knockoff sunglasses.
That's right. Women like to share their feelings. Men like pizza and floating around in the city.
So, okay, so are you?
I meant Venusian.
Yes.
So what's this is kind of a personal question.
Yes.
What's the bachelor party situation for you like? Who's planning it, and what's good? Are you?
I'm planning
the best man.
Are you guys each other's best man?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's precious.
Absolutely. I mean, I haven't planned a wedding yet, but when I have a wedding, Mike.
You guys want a hug or anything?
No,
okay.
We'll
just do the traditional best man circle jerk. That I guess it's really just a straight line.
How is that traditional? Is that
what everyone does,
what
right?
What country does that?
You have, because what happens is once you make somebody your best man, that person is morally obliged to make you their best man, because otherwise it would be like saying, well, sure, you're my favorite number one person in the world, but not vice versa.
Well, unless there are brothers involved.
Uh-huh.
I think best man came from like the two guys jerking each other off, and the other one was like, that is the best man, thanks. And then I think that's where that came from.
Which you can see Paul and Neil perform at the UCB live tonight at 9:30.
What?
I'm just kidding, I don't know. That just seems like one of those, like, did you hear that? Okay, it's a joke.
Did you hear that Neil shit out of his dick on stage?
Oh my God.
It's amazing.
That was a really insider reference. People across America are like, Paul and Neil?
Campbell and Rust. Campbell, hilarious, hilarious.
Delightful
sketch comedy,
comedy duo, Campbell and Rust.
Yep. Also occasionally dabble in self-mutilation.
Yeah, exactly. I've heard live on stage. But I don't want to get into self-mutilation when we're talking about important emotional issues, Jordan. Yeah.
Right. Well, but, I'm the best man in an upcoming wedding.
Okay.
My best buddy Ryan from high school, I'm the best man. And he's a real specific kind of guy, and kind of I'm finding it hard to plan a bachelor party with him, and I think this is the best way to describe Ryan to you. On his arm he has tattooed the Predator self-destruct sequence.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's totally awesome, but he is a guy who would get Oh, and he has his name tattooed on his back in the Halo font.
Well, then I think what you need to do with him as best man is teach him how to make love to a woman.
Right, yeah, yeah.
When that happens.
Well, it sounds like you could do either, I don't know if he paintballs, or if he, I mean, I'm trying to think of what can you do that's war
he does
and
wanna
fun.
Go, he does want to go paintballing. Yeah. That is something
you know what? I'll tell you what. Awesome. Theme it. Take him paintballing and make everyone allow him to believe that he's cloaked like the Predator.
Oh, right.
like,
where is he?
Make it like role-playing paintball.
He has to wear saran wrap. Oh, wait, no, that will make him invisible. I forgot. That'll just make him naked with
like, you'd be right there, and you're just playing along. You'd be like, I hear something, but I don't, you know, and then...
Come and get me!
Yeah.
You know. And then a friend of mine did, for his bachelor party, all he has wanted to do, you know, the only big thing on his list to check off with friends is to go to one of those, like, a LAN gaming place.
Oh, right.
So we all went to, like, this, like,
played,
you know...
Counter-Strike.
Yeah, we all played, like, Halo or whatever that game is, and we just shot each other for, like, 4 hours, you know, in all you know... on one big, huge picnic table. You know, there were like 10 computers. But it was fun. I mean, it was cool. Yeah. I don't know if he'd be... enough video games, I'm sure.
But. Right. Well, I'm sure he would be perfectly happy with that. But, I mean, yeah. aren't I kind of obliged to try and make it more rowdy than that?
I don't know.
Is that...
How old is he?
That is...
He's 26.
That is such a funny tradition that we have of, like... Well, to celebrate this special day, we're going to fucking ruin you. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
Because when Mike and I were talking, and he had said, you know, I don't want to go to Vegas, and I don't really want to get fucked up. You know, like, I just want to be so nice.
I can do that every
night. And then I get an email from his brother that's like, we're taking him to Vegas, we're getting fucked up. And I wrote back, like, I'm pretty sure this probably isn't what he wants to, you know.
I mean, he's probably not going to fight you on whatever. If you tried to get him, you know, if you show, he's going to assume you're going to show up with bottles of X, Y, and Z, and he's going to drink them all. And, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I assume, even if you say that, I assume that Billy and Jamie are not going to let me go without getting hammered.
They're going to try to get you high and hammered.
Yeah. Is that something that your buddy, because your buddy's kind of a straight arrow, isn't he?
Yeah.
Besides
well,
being
take him
nerd?
To a straight edge rave.
Right, yeah. Take him to see a Minor Threat cover band.
You know what? Here's what you do. Have him dress up like the Predator. You guys play paintball in an actual town, like in a city. Like you just go and like you started this corner
like
of town, I'll start that
like
one.
You
just run through
San
town.
San Berdoo or something.
Exactly. And what's important, Jordan,
you can just shoot a paintball gun if you wanted.
If the cops catch you, you have to take the rap. That's what it means. That's what it means to be best man.
No, you know, here's what you do. Go to, isn't there like some ghost towns outside of like between here and Vegas?
Oh, yeah. Well, Janet's dad writes ghost town books. I'm sure we could find
get a bunch of paintball gear and go to a ghost town where there's, like, nobody at all anywhere around and just shoot the place up.
Okay. That's a good suggestion.
Honor the memory of the departed town by firing colorful splotches of paint all over their memories.
That's right. Turn it into a... I was going to make a Punky Brewster's Wall reference, but...
Well, that's enough that you said that you wanted to.
I think I
won't. It's enough that you said that you wanted to.
Speaking of things we can take out in post, what are you leaning towards now, Jordan?
I don't know. Well, I mean, so we go paintballing in the afternoon, and I mean, like right now, I'm like, oh, well, I guess in the evening we'll all go to Dave and Buster's or something.
Comedy show.
Laugh Factory. Comedy show. No, it still have to be in Orange County. This is where everybody
well,
is.
Well, the Irvine Improv.
You got the Irvine Improv.
Seriously, yeah. Jordan, I think you could plan an entire night around Mega Shopping Center, the Irvine Spectrum.
Right, yeah, we can get some glow-in-the-dark t-shirts.
Yeah, from the store that sells only things that glow in the dark.
We'll get some
medieval armor from the store that only sells medieval armor.
And then all of the giant pretzels we can eat.
Yeah.
We could go to Medieval Times.
Yeah, no, that's kind of a good one. But again, I mean, I just want to make sure I'm not obligated to like trick him.
Have you asked
into,
him?
Like,
I mean, it would help. It might help if you asked him.
I did ask, and he said paintballing. But I'm just kind of.
But
feeling
isn't
like,
part of the idea
like I should trick him into getting so drunk he shits his pants?
Isn't part of the idea of having a bachelor party? And I say this as somebody who's made very uncomfortable by the prospect. Mm-hmm. But isn't part of the idea of a bachelor party that you like that the bachelor says like I don't know. I don't know if I want to do this.
Right.
And
yeah,
then everybody says, and then everybody says, no, you have to go see the strippers and drink until you vomit. And here's a prostitute and
pretty much
got you all this blow.
Like Chris, right. I'm making Chris drink and he's sober for 3 years now.
Yeah.
But he's going to get fucked up.
Well, it's a special occasion, so I might as well.
Yeah.
You know, for my
you might as well break your sacred
vow. If you love
vow.
Me as a friend, you drink. Those are the worst words you could ever say to someone. If you love me, you drink. Oh, come on, really?
Yeah,
yeah. Mm.
It isn't that, but seriously, yeah. Mike, you're looking at me. You seem a little bit more sanguine about this than Chris. I don't know if I buy into whatever Chris is selling. He hasn't really sold anything yet, but I don't know if I
selling what.
But isn't that part of the deal? Isn't that
real Rolex?
Well, yeah, no, I really honestly believe that there's something to be said for this is kind of the last time you've got everybody there. You're not really like whatever you do is not going to have any repercussions unless you actually like you know alcohol poisoning or something like that. Like you've got all your friends around. It's kind of the last chance to be out of your head before you become responsible.
I'll tell you. I mean, I've never been to a bachelor party. A couple of close friends have gotten married, and I just declined to attend the bachelor party because mm-hmm. it would be too weird. Because I don't drink, and the whole thing makes me uncomfortable. But I feel like that's the idea. Like part of the reason I didn't go was because I didn't want to make people uncomfortable.
You don't want to
do
to a
that.
Party where there's no teetotaling going on.
It's great though. I mean, I did. I went to Posehn's bachelor party in Vegas, and it was. There was a lot of drinking and stuff, and I just didn't drink. And of course, everyone made fun of me in the bus. Like, drink! You know, but it was all right. I mean, it wasn't that big of a deal. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I don't want the fact that I don't drink.
Well, the difference is if you're actually sober, if you drank, but on that night you just chose, I'm not really into drinking in
right,
days,
right,
they'd
right,
be
right,
like,
right.
Fuck off, come on. Right. But if you're like, hey.
No, but they still gave me shit about it.
Yeah, well, I'm sure.
Are you sure you don't want to? You know, it was a lot of that stuff, which is totally fine. But, I mean, I don't know. It's totally, you know, it's just totally up to whatever kind of vibe you want to create. And the other thing, too, is that I remember Mike had to go to a bachelor party, like, in Canada or something, and it was just sort of like, why would you require everyone to fly to Canada? You know, like, so...
But you know what? I've been to a few bachelor parties. That's the one I remember most. Like, there were, like, 12 people that all, like, fuck it, we'll do it. And then it's, like, it was a great, really cool...
Wait,
didn't go
was
to the
there
wedding
some
yeah,
was reason so... that it was in Canada? Like, was it, like, an ice fishing bachelor party or something?
No, yeah. Just Vancouver.
It's like
they all wanted free health care.
That's what I was about to say. Like, a socialized medicine-themed bachelor right. party.
It was the theme.
That's right.
Of the bachelor party. Oh, you hurt yourself. Let me fix that up for free.
Cheaper meds. Vacation. No, just fun. But yeah, I wouldn't make
shits all over that.
Yeah, but I also remember the LAN gaming one, and that was you know couldn't have been $30 a person. So one's $1,000, one's $30, and you know they're both really cool. I think just going to a strip club's a bummer. Like that's the only one that's like
strip clubs
just don't drag
me
out to a strip club and just sit around being like
I don't understand the allure. Like here's a lady who's paid to pretend like she likes me, and then as soon as that clock ends that she I you know like it just feels gross.
I think you just have to turn off your empathy, you know, just like you have to be able to have a switch inside of your soul that like just turns off your regard for or interest in any other person besides yourself.
Yeah, but still it just isn't gratifying to me in any way. It's just like oh yeah, you know, I don't know, it just feels weird, it just feels gross. And especially like in the bachelor parties that I've been to in Vegas, it's like if you walk in and you have money, they just surround you like pigeons. Yeah. It's just fucking gross.
I was at a friend's bachelor party in Vegas at the Crazy Horse Dose or whatever it is, and was sitting there, and a girl came by, oh, you want a lap dance? And this is like a group of like 15 guys or whatever, and everybody's going, oh, okay, yeah, sure. And she's doing, you know, she's basically her just like sitting, you know, she like sits on your legs and, you know, like kind of like rides around. and then talk to you.
And, that sounds like more fun for her,
I
mean, right?
Well, but little did she know, I had a dick sewn onto my knee. So I win.
You have on me when
you
she
have
did
a really
too.
Weird surgeon on retainer, don't you?
Yes, yes.
You're like, I've got to go to Oslo. I've got to get a foreskin put on my ear.
That's right. I like to experiment.
But then she sat there for the next probably, I don't know how long, but I think I lost track. I was very, very drunk. And lost track of how long she'd been there. And after a little while, I look over to my friend, and he was like, are you okay, dude? And I was like, I'm fine. Why? He's like, it's been a long time. And I was like, what are you talking about? Because she's just like sitting there. She'd like sit and chat, and like we chatted up for like an hour, right? And then he's like, ask her how much you owe her. And I'm like, how much I owe her? Oh, shit. And you pay by the song. I was like, excuse me. Yeah, pardon me, up here. What? How long? How much do I owe you right now? And she's like, I think we're at 320. I was like,
no.
Oh my fucking God.
Wait, you were just having a conversation about, you know.
Yeah, well, I mean,
when you say pay by the song, you mean she writes, she improvs a song?
Yeah, and then I pay her for it.
Oh,
and then,
well, at least that's something.
Yeah,
it's a work for hire situation. He gets all the rights.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, you can write that off.
Yeah.
It's a business expense.
Yeah, so I had to go and pull out $350 out of their little ATM. And,
I remember
and they
that.
Told me that they were like, oh, don't worry, it'll show up as on your bill as the power company. Like, yeah, just buy a fucking company. Windmill? Like, why do I owe the power company all of a sudden $350?
Honey, I've been running the microwave all night. So don't be freaked out when you see the bill from now renamed The Power Company.
Yeah, exactly.
And no power longer. Is in quotation marks, and there's one of those winking smiley faces.
And honey, I'm paying for a reunion
there's
of
there's an avatar of tits next to it.
That's right. I'm paying for a reunion concert of John Taylor and Robert Palmer.
Oh, my God. That's a power station.
Oh, shit.
Not the power company.
No wonder she got mad. She could see right through it.
I think the power company isn't that like a early 80s PBS educational television?
That's the electric company.
Okay, yeah. Well, there you go. You guys want to sing another song before we're finished?
What do you want to, what other song can we do?
I don't know. What do we have?
You got a lot of songs.
Maybe we should do Lincoln.
Okay. Because it is President's Day month.
All right, let's do the Lincoln song.
All right.
So Mike and I believe that Abraham Lincoln's great successes boiled down to one simple five-step formula, and we will reveal that formula to you in the chorus.
Here we go.
Abraham Lincoln was as tall as a hickory tree and twice as tough. Having been raised poor, he knew not of the class distinctions that relegated men of differently toned skin to the underbelly of society. So when he was elected to the office of high official, the repercussions tasted anything but sweet. War soon erupted in the face of change, because the only elderly things that don't die easily are customs. Still, in the midst of chaos in 1863, Abraham Lincoln drafted a document, an idea that had been conceived on the mattress of goodwill and birthed in the stirrups of valor. That document was the Emancipation Proclamation, and when he signed it, he held his pen up high, looked toward his soulless nemesis slavery, and shouted with a purity of heart, "Hey, slavery! You know what you can do?
Put your lips around my balls. And just suck and suck and suck and suck. And put your lips around my balls. And just suck and suck and suck and suck. And put your lips around my balls. And just suck and suck and suck and suck. And I may blink and here's my balls. And just suck and suck and suck and suck and suck."
Chapter 2. Just 5 days after General Lee's surrender to Union forces at Appomattox Courthouse, tragedy struck on April 14, 1865, when Confederate sympathizer John Wilkes Booth shot President Lincoln in Washington, D.C. at the Ford's Theater for talking during the performance. Many historians recount the final hours before his death with great sadness, while others maintain that he lived the next 112 years as a vampire, subsisting on cow hearts and racists, until a logging accident in Evanston, Indiana, claimed the life of one of America's greatest vampire presidents. One thing none can dispute were the final fearless words he spoke to the angel of death himself right before he expired. He said,
Put your lips around my balls and just suck and suck and suck and suck. And place those lips around these balls and just suck and suck and suck and suck. And put your lips around my balls and just suck and suck and suck and suck. And take these 16th president balls and just suck and suck and suck and suck and suck.
One time Abe really wanted to get blown, so he telegraphed a widow in Kentucky that read,
put your lips around my balls and just suck and suck and suck and suck. And put your L's around my B's and just S and S and S and S and S.
Put your lips around my balls and just
suck 'em and suck 'em and suck 'em and suck 'em and suck 'em.
I'm Honest Abe Lincoln, and I honestly want you to link on to my balls.
Break it down. Put your lips around my balls and just suck and suck and suck and suck. And put your lips around my balls and just suck and suck and suck. Bring it home. If you want to succeed in life, just remember the words that were definitely used by Abraham Lincoln. And whisper to the wind, put your lips around my balls and just suck and suck and suck and suck and suck.
Still trying to take the last bit of vibration out of the guitar.
There you go. That was really powerful, guys.
Wow.
That's right.
Well,
it might be out of tune.
It sounded all right.
Sounded great to the listeners.
President Lincoln would have been proud.
Of course, you guys are going to. You guys are always on the internet at Hard N Firm HardNPhirm.
That's right.
.com.
Hard and Firm will work as well.
Oh,
yes,
good.
But not with an F. That was an entirely different site. Yeah. We couldn't get the rights to that one.
Yeah, I wrote the guy and I was like, hey, I was just wondering if we could just take your. Like, you own this. Can we buy Hard and Firm? He's like, yeah, sure. How much are you thinking about? I was like, I don't know, like $40, $50. He's like, I sell these sites for 3,000 plus. Okay, fuck you.
3,000 plus, huh?
I am a respectable gay pornographer, yeah, sir. Right. You've insulted my... Yes,
I'm a business fag, sir. And I... Yeah, so...
I have a fancy charity dinner for faggots to get to.
Guys...
You don't have to... we're on the MySpace, too. And
do you guys have any dates coming up around the nation that people should know about?
Going to Coachella, I think.
Yeah, we're doing Comedians of Comedy at Coachella.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Should I mention that yet?
I don't know. Well, it's not for sure, but it's pretty
likely.
Likely.
Yeah, it's yeah.
And we're doing a show in Illinois on March 4th.
At the Orpheum Theater in Galesburg, Illinois. Oh, now it sounds like we're on the Joe Franklin show.
We'll be at the Orpheum Theater in Galesburg. They have a lovely donut hut there. Please come by.
If you said that twice as fast, it would have sounded like Jimmy Pardo.
Oh, what? That's amazing.
Well, guys, thank you for coming on Jordan, Jesse, Go.
Oh, thanks, you, man, for having us on. It's great to come be a part of the new podcast.
A pleasure and a joy.
Yes, it is.
Well, that's just about the end of Jordan, Jesse, Go. I've been Jesse Thorne, America's radio sweetheart.
I've been Jordan Morris, boy detective.
Action items. Number one, the high five contest continues apace. What a delight. We're going to put up, we took pictures of, Chris Hardwick had to go somewhere, but we took some pictures of Mike Furman high-fiving. We're going to put those up on the Sound of Young America Flickr group, which is at flickr.com/group/maximumfunpics. Okay. We've got all these prizes for people who take high fives. Here's the basic rules, and you can find the full rules on the Sound of Young America forum at MaximumFun.org. But here's the basic rules. A point for every picture of you high-fiving, plus bonus points for high-fiving animals, babies, coworkers, in the air, on a Polaroid, or in front of an important tourist attraction or monument. Is that all of them?
Yeah, and should we run down the prizes again?
Yeah, the prizes are sneakmove.com gave us a really cool Stephen Colbert t-shirt to give away. It's a picture of Colbert and the president. It says, "We're not brainiacs on the Nerd Patrol," which is very charming. The top three finishers will get a Sound of Young America t-shirt, which is printed on high-quality American Apparel t-shirts and features a cool picture of a rocket ship taking off. We've got, what else are we giving away? There's other stuff.
SCTV
DVD. Oh, there's an SCTV DVD box set. The SCTV, the best of the early years, thanks to our friends at Shout Factory for that. And we're probably adding more prizes. I can't remember that. I think there was other prizes. Oh, Sneak Move also giving you a selection of their CDs and record albums. So a lot of cool stuff giving away if you take the high fives. And one of the cool things we did is I put up pictures of myself high-fiving the air.
Mm-hmm.
And you can get points for photoshopping yourself or someone else into that picture. So someone posted a high five of me, a picture of me high fiving my evil twin, which was just me with a goatee.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody put up a picture of me high fiving that animal,
the kinkajou,
or honey bear. Which is really a sweet little animal. Apparently one bit Paris Hilton. I read that on the internet when I looked up kinkajou.
Oh, nice.
And people have been taking lots of, there's a lot of cool little kid pictures. Oh man, high-fiving a little kid's one of the coolest. High-five a coworker, that's a bonus point.
Yeah.
So that's your first action item. And you take the pictures, put them up on the Flickr group at flickr.com/groups/maximumfunpics. Action item number two, tell us what your worst or most awesome job was in your entire life. Call us at 206-984-4FUN. That's the Maximum Fun line, 206-984-4FUN. And tell us what it was, and we'll talk about it some more on next week's program. Jordan, you have an important action item.
Oh, also, yes, we talked to Hard and Firm about my buddy Ryan's bachelor party coming up, keeping in mind that he is a video game nerd like myself, maybe even more so. What can I plan for the bachelor party? What's something fun, and also maybe some potential ways to trick him into getting rowdy?
That's awesome. With it, you could think of some cool tricks.
Yeah, some cool rowdiness tricks.
Maybe some way to embed alcohol into Wolfenstein 3D.
if there's a way. So, suggestions for that are greatly appreciated.
206-984-4FUN or jjgo@maximumfun.org. And you know what? Every week on the Sound of Young America forum at maximumfun.org/forum, there is a red-hot discussion of the show, which has actually been happening, Jordan. I mean, you've seen it there on the forum.
It's been reasonably red-hot.
Yeah, people get really excited, worked up, and I encourage that. So visit us on the internet at maximumfun.org/forum and post your thoughts about the show and get into arguments with people and tell us what you think is awesome and so on. And you know, there are also, before we finish, I want to mention there's a couple of continuing action items, most important of which is Judge John Hodgman. I talked to Judge John Hodgman. He's willing to settle some more personal disputes, but we need more personal disputes for him to settle. So if you have a personal dispute, no matter how large or small, and you and the person with whom you dispute are willing to get on the phone, then do so. Give us a call and tell us what it is, or send us an email and tell us what it is. And maybe you can have your dispute decided by the Daily Show's own Judge John Hodgman. That's about it, right?
I think that does it.
We'll see you guys next week on Jordan, Jesse, Go.